League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The Initial Reaction Podcast, coming at you once again from Studios Unknown. My name is J.R. Radcliffe. I'm with Lake Country Publications and Now Newspapers.
Coming to you from Abu Dhabi, I'm J.P. Kedorn. I also don't know where Abu Dhabi is. I just tried to think of a weird foreign town.
It's the capital of the United Arab Emirates.
Really? I learned something today. Anyway, I'm J.P. Kedorn from Time Warner Cable Sports Channel, currently located in Time Warner Cable Sports Channel, where we are putting the finishing touches on Sports Weekly this week. One of the things it includes is a recap of Saturday's high school football All-Star Games.
And J.P. Kedorn was the sideline reporter for said All-Star Games, so we'll great deal about what you saw there. And after that, we got a great interview coming up with Ben Wargle of the Badger Nation, JP's close personal friend, and a guy who knows everything there is to know about Badgers stuff. So we talked football, we talked basketball, we talked recruiting. Great to have him on. He needs to be on our show like all the time. We're renaming him B-Dubs so that he can fit into the Initial Reaction concept there, if you didn't already get the double entendre thing going on. And he's going to be on our show like all the time now, right? Can we guarantee that?
But we can hope. It's up to him. Yes, he's too big time for us. He has to knock himself down a peg or two in order to hang out with us. But no, that is
a big
good
deal. He needs his own like regular podcast. I would listen to that all the time. The guy's knowledge is ridiculous.
Yeah, absolutely. So he will be covering a few players that were in the high school football All-Star games. Cole Van Lannen out of Bayport ended up playing in the game. Mason Stocky out of Menominee ended up playing in the game. Those are two Badgers commits. I think there were a couple others, which is fun because normally if a player is a big-time Division I recruit, chances are they're not going to play in the game. I know the two Iowa recruits, Torin Young and Nathan Stanley, did not play in the game, which I was obviously disappointed about.
Yeah, Ben Bredesen wasn't there, the Michigan recruit.
Yeah, so and you understand why. I mean, most of them are already moved on to campus. Pretty much all of them are already moved into campus already, and their coaches don't want them getting hurt. I know 2 or 3 years ago, one Jazz Peavy was injured in practice when he decided to race one of his teammates after a practice, pulled his hamstring, and missed his entire first year of college football. So it's not a bad idea to sit out, but it would be nice to get truly the best talent in the state there. But it was fun.
Yeah, actually, I was surprised to see the guys you mentioned, Mason Stocky, on the field, given that they're going to the University of Wisconsin. But, yep, like you said, totally understandable. You don't want if you're going to get hurt playing football, they want it to be for the program for which they have been committed. So I can understand it. But there were still plenty of talented kids there, some of whom going D2, D3, some who may not be even playing football next year but had great high school careers and seasons. I'm curious to know, you were standing on the sidelines, who stood out? That's always the first question to ask. There's that Joe Schobert effect. Like, jumped off the page and became a guy that could maybe move up with some late recruitment chatter?
So the story there, for those who don't know, is that Joe Schobert was planning on walking on to, I believe, the University of North Dakota at the time that he played in this All-Star game. That was after setting the Division I state title game rushing record, besting John Clay for that, and showed up to the All-Star game and had a good, week of practice of everything and was showing well. And then during the game, the actual All-Star game, just was absolutely on fire and proved how good of a player he really was. That night or that week, the high school coaches called Brett Bielma and said, "Why isn't this kid heading to Madison right now?" They watched the tape, and Joe Schobert became a Badger, and then, a couple years later became an All-American. This year, I don't think anybody is going to get the Joe Schobert Award, not for lack of effort. I think The one guy that I was really impressed with was Jonathan Bell from Hope Christian, which is in Milwaukee. I do not go to a lot of Hope Christian games, nor do I follow a lot of their moves. But he was a wide receiver who caught everything thrown his way, and he is tall and fast and talented. I don't know if it was that eye-opening to where other D1 programs are going to take a look, or any D1 programs are going to take a look. He's staying in state and in the WEAC, but certainly impressed by him. And then the other player who I believe is going to Wisconsin, so I don't think the Joe Schobert rule applies to him either because he's already going, would be Garrett Groshek out of Amherst. And I fully apologize. This is my fault for not paying attention to him during the year, because apparently everybody else got the memo but me, because he was the coach's offensive player of the year. He did win a state title. They annihilated their opponent in the state title game. But, you know, if it's not one of my 300 teams that I have to follow, I usually don't pay attention. And that was my first time watching him, and he was spectacular at quarterback for the North squad.
Most importantly, Garrett Groshek had one of the most glorious mullets to ever grace the Camp Randall Football Stadium turf when his team, Amherst, won the state championship, and my understanding is that mullet has now gone, sadly, but yeah, he had a tremendous year and certainly caught the attention of people at the state championship games, if not sooner. He was huge there, too, so the big stage, definitely not a problem for that guy. I'd be interested to see how he moves his way up the depth chart at Wisconsin. So, a kid from Milwaukee Lutheran impressed me as I'm watching the broadcast. Donovan Rethel, I think is how you say his name.
Yep, wide receiver, right?
Yep. And then the big play, of course, is the guy from Reedsburg who you interviewed on the sideline. And then literally the next play, he goes onto the field and forces a fumble. That was impressive stuff, JP. Good inspiration.
Dude, it is so much fun to work that day. We broadcast two games. I do sideline reporting for both games. And it's an exhibition. It's a showcase. You know, it's not taken too seriously. So the coaches have given us permission to interview players during the game because it's a showcase. It's for charity, and nobody really cares about the X's and O's of the game and what's going on. It's just kind of, you know, spotlighting these kids. In the past, my all-time favorite interview is with a Catholic Memorial kid, Sam Gromacki, who had stars and stripes shaved into his head and his hair dyed red, white, and blue, which went with his theme of his friend, and I forgot his friend's name, enlisted in the military and couldn't play in the game because he was already gone. So he wore number 34 in his honor, and then just gave one of the best interviews I'd ever had. Just about, it was so funny. He was talking about how he was a teammate with some kids from Arrowhead and how he used to hate these Arrowhead kids during the year, understandably, just like every team hates every other conference rival. And then during the interview, he talks about how, yeah, it's great. We're all friends. We're going fishing after this. Like, we're going to be buds. And I'm just like, oh, my God, fantastic. But I think I started to say all that in terms of these kids give interviews during the game, and they talk about raising money for Children's Hospital of Wisconsin. They raised $453,000 this year between all the divisions. So they're just, you know, these are the best football players in the state, but one of the recurring themes from the coaches and everything was that these are also some of the best kids in the state, just based on, I forgot his name, unfortunately. What is his name? But anyway, he's from Brookfield Academy, and he was the top fundraiser this year, and he raised over $11,000 on his own.
Crazy.
Which is really impressive.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, it's enjoyable to watch, too. It's kind of a nice reminder of the top players in Wisconsin, because we're several months removed from the football season, and you're kind of thinking, you kind of forget about a lot of these kids, especially outside the area, and then you learn a little bit about where they're headed next. So that's a fun thing, and it's just kind of a fun atmosphere. They get the whole week to sort of bond, like you're talking about, and meet each other if they don't already know each other, and become give themselves a chance to put on a pretty good show at Oshkosh. Great venue for that event, by the way, too. Perfect.
It's amazing. It's amazing. So they live in the dorms. The South squads train at UW Whitewater. The North squads train at UW Oshkosh, and they live in the dorms. They become friends with each other. Yeah, and then All Star Saturday. I mean, Titan Stadium is one of my absolute favorite stadiums in the state. I have talked, I think, with you and with others that I would not at all be disappointed if the state football game was hosted at Titan Stadium, because I don't like it at Camp Randall. It's an empty stadium, and it's devoid of any sort of atmosphere short of the 50 kids that you can hear on the field. So I love Titan Stadium. It really gets packed. It's not to capacity, but you know, there's a good crowd watching, and it's some good games, it's some good kids, it's a good charity, it's just a lot of fun.
So as we mentioned, some of those kids will be playing at the University of Wisconsin, which brings us to our expert interview of this week's podcast. Ben Wargle, as we mentioned, from the Badger Nation, who knows all there is to know about Badger hoops and football, stopped by, chatted with us about some of the goings-on. The upcoming football season is just not that far away. Beginning of September is the Badgers' big battle at Lambeau Field against the LSU Tigers. That's going to be a fun one. It's going to tell us a lot about where this team is headed this year. It's a little bit of a mystery how that one will play out. So give a listen to our interview with Ben.
All right, let's bring in the one and only Benjamin Wargle, my best friend from Badger Nation. How are you today, Ben?
Hey, first time, long time, JP. Glad to be here.
Don't do that to me. Don't do that to me.
This is the first podcast I listen to every morning with my morning coffee.
I appreciate that. And you listen to it every day of the week just to see if we've uploaded a new one?
Absolutely.
Very nice of you.
And if you haven't, I still listen to the old one just to hear your sultry voices tell me what's going on in the state of Wisconsin.
I would not describe our voices as sultry. That's a new descriptor for me.
No.
Well, JP has been telling me he's been voted sexiest media man in Madison about 10 years running. So I haven't seen the publication that lists that. I just take him at his word for it.
That's how transcendent he is. He's not on TV in Madison and still getting named sexiest man in the media every year. That's incredible.
It's amazing. That's just kind of the power that he transcends from county to county.
Let's start off, just to refresh me, to educate JR and the people, what is your background? How long have you been doing this? Because you are a Badgers expert, whether you like to admit it or not. How long have you been doing it?
Well, I started at Wisconsin as a student in 2003, was a season football ticket holder. That was the year of Lee Evans from Matt Schabert against Ohio State, and that's kind of when I got hooked a little bit on being a sports reporter. I actually went to school to be a pharmacist. That didn't work out too well. And then I kind of stumbled into this. One of my roommates in the old OG, 808 OG West is where I lived. My neighbor worked at the Badger Herald, one of the two student newspapers on campus. He took me to a writer's meeting. I wrote a notebook off Wisconsin's sweep over then number one North Dakota in men's hockey. And I've kind of turned it into a career. I've been with Badger Nation since my junior year, so that was 2005. And I pretty much have been running the site exclusively since 2006. So I've been doing this for quite some time, doing football, basketball, recruiting, a little bit of hockey, and then whatever else comes up that is warranted to be on the pages of BadgerNation.com.
Is that kind of crazy to you that you've able to fashion a career out of this that really just started as – you know, just kind of website stuff that now it is your entire life and your way to provide for your adorable little family and everything like that? Is that at all crazy to you or no?
Yeah, it beats counting pills in a pharmacy or CVS. No disrespect to those people. I know they do more than that.
But pharmacists get paid so much more than we do, though.
Yeah, yeah. Go drive your Beamer to your lake house. And deal with that. No, I mean, I really have enjoyed it. And what's been great is that the last 5 to 6 years have been just an incredible time for Wisconsin athletics, from the three straight Rose Bowls to the back-to-back Final Fours. You certainly look at where men's basketball is now. Certainly they are on the rise once again. We'll be very interested to see what this football team will do this year. While they could be very good at a lot of positions, but they could be a better overall team than they were a year ago, their schedule is just so gosh dang hard, with games against LSU and at Michigan, Michigan State, Ohio State, the first 3 weeks of Big Ten play. But that's what's going to make it exciting. I would rather cover those games than cover Wisconsin, Maryland, Wisconsin, Rutgers, Wisconsin, Indiana, anything like that. So certainly it's been a lot of fun getting a chance to follow this team around and get to interact with Wisconsin fans who are as passionate about this team as I am. I enjoy being a part of Wisconsin athletics from my very small snippet that I get to be.
So let's talk about that team. I operate under the assumption that they will not be as good as they have been in previous years, purely because of the schedule that you're kind of talking about. That first game of the season, I guess, for me would be a pretty good indication of just how good or not good the team figures to be in 2016. I'm thinking they're going to be as good as they were last year, maybe a little better. I don't know. What is sort of where's the temperature of this team in your mind, and I guess how much of a shot do they have against LSU in that season opener at Lambeau?
Well, I always think those opening games are coin flips to a degree. Maybe not so much last year because it was evident when you watched Alabama that the Tide was just so much better than Wisconsin. Wisconsin had so many question marks going into that game. And obviously Alabama won the national championship a year ago. So you certainly look at that game more so 2 years ago with LSU down in Houston, where you thought Wisconsin wasn't going to have much of a fighting chance, and they probably should have won that game. Some questionable decisions were made with Melvin Gordon and quarterback, and certainly some injuries on the defensive side of the ball hurt them as the game wore on. But should any of those things not have gone the way it did, Wisconsin probably wins that game. But you look at this LSU team, they're going to be better than they were 2 years ago. I think I've seen some sites that has LSU in the top 10 preseason. But that's the best thing about these openers and these big-time openers. Nobody knows exactly what's going to be trotted out. There's no film on either team. There's just film on personnel. So you can do a lot of different things in a game that maybe you couldn't do in week 4, week 5, week 6, so on and so forth. So I certainly think Wisconsin has a fighting chance against LSU. I think the opportunity to play in Green Bay is not something that is going to be lost among these players, a lot of whom are from the state or the surrounding states that grew up Packer fans that realize the magnitude of playing at Lambeau Field, how rare it is. I think it's been since the 70s when St. Norbert's had a game there, so it's been quite a few decades since a college game was at Lambeau Field. And, you know, you certainly look at the start of the Big Ten schedule, which will be extremely challenging. I mentioned not just at Michigan State, at Michigan, the bye week in Ohio State, but then you go right back on the road to Iowa. You have Nebraska at home, and then you go to Northwestern, where you haven't won since 99. So there's going to be a lot of challenges this year for Wisconsin, but you talk to the players in spring, they're embracing those challenges. They look at the schedule. It excites them. It's going to get them, you know, maybe a little bit more juiced up for the season than they were maybe a year ago or 2 years ago, where the schedule has been considerably easier.
So going into that first game then, this is less of an X's and O's question, more of a big picture question of, like, how much pressure is there on that game because of, I mean, there's so many different things, because of a new quarterback, because of a new defensive coordinator, because it is LSU, because, and then all that leads up to that schedule that you just touched on. Like, if they lose against LSU, then they have, in theory, layups against Akron and Georgia State. But then if they lose LSU, Michigan State, Michigan, Ohio State, and then maybe Iowa, Nebraska, Northwestern, you know, like, how is this program going to deal with that? You know, we've never seen 2-6 before, have we? At least not for 20 years.
And you forgot the other really fun sub-storyline of this game is Dave Aranda, the new LSU defensive coordinator, who knows this defensive personnel very well. He knows this offensive personnel very well. So that's going to be a fun subplot to this game that will be much talked about in the next month as this game gets closer. So, you know, you look at Wisconsin football about 5-6 years ago when these games were announced, and by games, and not just the two against LSU, but the game against Alabama, fans have been clamoring for years for Wisconsin to up the ante in their non-conference schedule. They were tired of all these cupcake opponents, you know, Buffalo, Cal Poly, South Dakota, the Citadel, so on and so forth. They wanted to see Wisconsin play bigger name teams in the non-conference schedule. Now, granted, they would love to have seen some of these games at home, but the Badger fans, for the most part, are getting what they wanted. If they go 0-3 against the so-called powerhouses of the SEC, it's going to be a big question mark of where exactly does Wisconsin rank in the echelon of college football. I think they're a very good program. I don't necessarily think they're a great program. When you don't make it into the conversation for the college football playoff, or you're not winning big-time bowl games. I mean, winning the Outback Bowl is nice over a good Auburn team. Beating USC is good by name brand, but USC wasn't a great team last year. You certainly have to wonder where Wisconsin fits in. I would almost say that just from a program standpoint, winning against LSU in Lambeau Field is a must-win for your program to validate where you sit in the grand scheme of things. And then whatever happens from there is kind of is what it is. But you're right, JP. And I, to a degree, I would even say that Akron and Georgia State won't be complete pushovers. I mean, both those teams did play in a bowl game last year. I mean, I think of Wisconsin's first 9-10 games, I think the first 9 are all against teams that played in a bowl game a year ago. Now, granted, there's about 700 bowl games in college football, but this isn't going to be the easiest schedule for Wisconsin. And you're right. Wisconsin typically has been in the conversation for 9-10 plus wins every year. How will fans handle it if they come out of the gates 2-5, 2-6, and need to win their final three games against Illinois, Purdue, and Minnesota just to make a bowl game at 6-6? It's going to be a very interesting year just because there's a lot of returning personnel that makes this team appear like they can compete, but there's also some big question marks, particularly at quarterback and who your two starting safeties are going to be, arguably the two critical positions on this football team.
So let's talk about some of that, the other personnel. There's some guys from the Milwaukee area that we have particular interest in since they hail from our coverage area, that being T.J. Watt of Pewaukee, Alec James of Brookfield East, Chikwe Obase of Brookfield Central. All of them have contributed to some degree over the last few years, but speaking specifically about those guys, what do you expect from them in this next season, and then maybe a couple other guys that we have no expectations for who are going to take a big leap forward?
You know, certainly you look at T.J. Watt and where he was a year ago at this time, buried on the tight end depth chart. You had serious questions about his health, continued to have issues with his ankle, with his knee, and they made the decision in fall camp to switch him to defense, switch him to linebacker, and you started to see flashes of it during the season. You know, he's playing maybe a handful of reps every game, but as the season wore on, you could tell he got more comfortable. Wisconsin put him in there in some key pass-rushing situations, and he made an impact, particularly in the Minnesota game, also the USC bowl game, where you could see that the athleticism was a natural fit at that position. And it shouldn't be a surprise. I mean, J.J. Watt was once a tight end. Derek Watt was once a linebacker. I mean, these Watt boys really stink at their first position, and then they switch positions, and they become, you know, NFL-caliber players. You know, T.J. Watt is going to move into Vince Beagle's old spot at linebacker, and then Beagle is going to switch over to Joel Schobert's position. So the play of this front seven, and this could be a scary good front seven, which will lead me into Chikwe Obase and Alec James in a second, will be paced by the play of those outside linebackers. And I think T.J. Watt, if he can really master the run-stopping aspect to the game and not just being that one-note pass rusher, he could become a scary good player and potentially an all-conference type player. And where we've seen Wisconsin take a nice step forward in the last year, year and a half in this 3-4 scheme is in the defensive line play. You know, Connor Sheehy has done a nice job kind of flipping between nose tackle and defensive end. They're going to play him at end this year. But Chikwe Obase has been that one guy on the line who has been more than just a guy that sucks up double teams to open up alleys for the linebackers to make plays. It's no surprise in this 3-4 scheme. You have seen, you know, T.J. Edwards, Chris Orr, Jack Stitchy, Joe Schobert, Watt Beagle kind of rack up the tackle numbers because the guys in front are doing their job and not getting much, you know, praise heaped on them in terms of their big stat numbers. But Obashi's kind of been that one exception where he's led the line in the last 2 years in tackles for loss, had over 40 tackles for last year. So by those numbers, you would think he would be happy with his progression. He's not. He's very irritated that he hasn't been able to really make a mark in the same way that a J.J. Watt did when he was here or a Brian Schofield. I mean, different types of schemes, but certainly Obase expects more out of himself, and you could see that in the spring with the way that he was really taking it upon himself to become more of a playmaker, win more of his one-on-one matchups, be more aggressive. Outside containment was big for him to be sure he's not over-pursuing, not getting too geeked up to the point where he's missing plays because he's so focused on just getting to the quarterback. So I really think that with him now under the coaching of Inoki Brechterfield for a second straight year, that will help him elevate his game. And certainly with Alec James too, he was a guy that really worked a lot with Xander Neuville in Wisconsin's peso package where they were the two down linemen in third down situations. You know, Alec is going to be that third defensive lineman in the rotation where if Obase needs a break or if Sheehy needs a break, that James will be able to step right in, continue to work in third down, and he'll continue to be a guy that you can see will make an impact. James was one of those highly coveted guys coming out of high school, probably more so than Obase was. And I don't think James has quite reached that that level of expectation for himself yet, where he was a player that was coveted by Oregon, Alabama looked at him, and all these different, you know, really Power Five schools. But he's slowly starting to figure it out and starting to get into a good rhythm, where this defensive line rotation should be very strong this year. I mean, you do lose Arthur Goldberg, who had to quit football because of health issues, but now you have Obashi, you have James, you have Sheehy, you have Olivier Sangapulu, who was so surprisingly good as a true freshman. You know, Jeremy Patterson, can he take a step forward? And then where does Garrett Rand, the four-star defensive tackle from Chandler, Arizona, coming in this season, where does he fit into the mix? But, you know, this defensive line could be the best we've seen in a couple of years, and that will make this whole defensive front seven that much stronger because of it.
So I want to get to basketball in a second, but I guess to kind of wrap up football and get into basketball, it's kind of the same question of how much momentum is there on the recruiting trail for football, just because basketball, it seems like, you know, their stock has never been higher with the Final Fours and with Davison King and Nathan all committing to basketball. How much recruiting momentum is there on the football side?
Well, it's interesting because last year Wisconsin had one of their best classes ever. Since Scout started ranking recruiting classes dating back to the early 2000s, Wisconsin never had a top 25 recruiting class. Last year they were number 25. And they really did a great job of finding some tremendous talent in a lot of different areas. I mean, they went to the Northeast, they went to Arizona, they got a lot out of Florida, and then they kind of dabbled in the Midwest. And this year, Wisconsin is very, very short on scholarships. They went into this class with only maybe around 14, 15, 16, and they went out recruiting so quick and so aggressively that they got 10 of those commitments by the first week of May. You know, they locked up all the top kids from in-state, you know, like Tyler Beach and Logan Bruss and Alex Fenton and Jake Ferguson and, you know, Caden Lyles, who's transferring from Arizona to be closer to his brother Correa. You know, they went to North Carolina. They went into New York for a quarterback. And we've been sitting here since May waiting for the next commitment to drop, and it just hasn't come because Wisconsin only has maybe about two or three scholarships left. So when you have a class that is so small, it's really hard to generate momentum that gets people talking throughout the year. But you have to give Wisconsin credit because they identified who all their top players were, and they went after them strong. They went after them aggressively, and they got a lot of them to commit by the spring. So this entire summer has been spent on Wisconsin focusing on the 2018 recruiting class, where they're going to have numbers back into the low 20s again, and to really start developing those relationships to hopefully get a head start down the road in the future. So, you know, in terms of what Wisconsin football has been doing, it maybe won't register nationally. You know, it's not going to be a highly ranked recruiting class because there's so few scholarships to deliver. But in terms of talent, they've addressed every position. You know, you get a quarterback out of New York. You get a running back transfer in Chris James, who originally played in Chicago. You get a wide receiver out of Texas in Cade Green. You know, you get your tight end in Ferguson. You get all four of your offensive line targets, which is incredible to get them that early. You get a defensive end target in Aaron Volpel. You've gone after defensive backs in Madison Cone, Nick Nelson, who's going to transfer from Hawaii. He's originally from Maryland. So Wisconsin has really addressed every position on the football field. And so now they're just going to go and be greedy and try to go after these four-star, five-star, high three-star kids to really round out their recruiting class.
So let's switch to the hard court and talk about Greg Gard's recruiting efforts. It's his first, I guess, first full year now here as the big cheese for the Wisconsin basketball program. And he's brought in the three kids that JP mentioned. Nathan, is it Rivers or Roivers?
Reivers, I've been told.
All right. Wrong.
Kobe King and Brad Davison. And it's a really highly regarded recruiting class, and that kind of surprises me, nothing against these particular kids, but when you hear about kids coming from the upper Midwest, namely Wisconsin and Minnesota, you don't really think that that's going to be one of the top recruiting classes in the country. I mean, is it accurate to say that this is truly one of the top recruiting classes in the country? And I guess, does it not surprise you that it's kind of that they're coming from really just our neighborhood?
Well, as it stands today, Wisconsin has the eighth best recruiting class in the country by scout.com. Wisconsin has never had a top 10 recruiting class. Now, granted, this list will change because there's no Kentucky on it. There's no Duke on it. There's no Kansas on it. All those schools are going after, you know, those five-star kids and aren't going to decide until much closer to National Signing Day or even until the spring. So it's a a popular opinion that those schools will jump Wisconsin. So it's fun to talk about right now that Wisconsin has done so well. They've inked 3 4-star kids, and the key in this whole equation is Greg Gard, you know, Bo's longtime assistant, who has been able to develop relationships with these kids for such a long time. I mean, Kobe King and Gard go back, you know, many years, and King committed back in September, and he always said that, you know, I don't fully expect to play my entire college career for Bo Ryan. I am hopeful that I am playing on a team that has Greg Gard as a head coach or an assistant coach, because I am very comfortable and loyal and respect Greg Gard. And then you look at Brad Davison, who just committed about a week and a half ago. Davison is the same way. Gard started recruiting him in Minnesota, which has been Gard's honey hole for years. I mean, think of all the great players that have come out of Minnesota for Wisconsin that Gard recruited. Guys like, you know, Jared Berggren and Cam Taylor and Jordan Taylor and Mike Brusewitz and John Luehr. Brad Davison and Gard have gone back to Davison's freshman year. And Nathan Reavers is a kid that really has blossomed over the last, you know, 6 months, probably even less than that. He led his team to a state title game, has really seen his height increase, his weight increase, his confidence increase to the point where he was just kind of ranked as a kind of a middle-tier 3-star player. And you look at him now, he's a 4-star player, and he's a top 80 in the country by Scout.com. So you look at how recruiting cycles go, every year kind of has its ebbs and flows. You know, last year in the Midwest was really a down year for positional talent, especially at the guard position. That's why Wisconsin had to go out and recruit point guards in Oregon and Washington and Ohio. And, you know, they ended up finding Demetric Trice out of Florida, originally from Ohio. And now you see the talent back in the Midwest really start to jump up again. That's always kind of been Wisconsin's bread and butter, you know, in-state recruiting, Minnesota quite a bit, Ohio quite a bit. And now with Maryland Rutgers in the Big Ten footprint, you've seen Wisconsin go to the east a little bit more, get a guy like Charlie Thomas out of Maryland. So, you know, to see Wisconsin have a top 10 recruiting class is a little surprising. To see that they got some really good kids from the Midwest who fit the mold of their program, that's not surprising at all.
So this is kind of – I'm trying to figure out how to word this question, because Greg Gard has been such a present part of the recruiting process. But and I love Bo Ryan as much as every other Wisconsin Badger fan. But is it a little bit of an indictment on the situation that Bo Ryan has never been able to do what Greg Gard is doing in his first year as head coach, and that's bring in, I mean, obviously won't stay as a top 10 recruiting class, but a highly regarded recruiting class? You know, I've kind of always operated under the assumption the kids that Bo Ryan gets are really, he obviously can transform them into great players, and kind of the best of what he can get, given that Wisconsin isn't a destination program per se, like some others might be. But seeing Greg Gard just go ahead and do that, I mean, I felt like last year would have been the year when they were coming off the Final Fours to really bring in an all-star, nationally regarded class, and he's able to do it even a year after that. I don't know. Does it just strike you as interesting that with the new regime, they're able to climb up the recruiting charts like this?
I thought Wisconsin would take a step forward in recruiting because of Gard being the head coach. I mean, you certainly look at in the last 10 years, with the exception of Frank Kaminsky, all the great players that have come through Wisconsin have been recruited by Greg Gard, you know, especially in-state guys, Decker, Koenig, Brian Butch, and the Minnesota guys that I mentioned. You know, all those guys have Greg Gard's name attached to them. And the one difference with this staff compared to Bo's staff is that this staff, I think, is a little bit hungrier in terms of recruiting. Certainly Howard Moore, with what he's able to do in the Chicago area, and that area won't always yield great products for Wisconsin, but it's yielded Frank Kaminsky, you know, Duye Dukan, you know, on an MBA contract. Certainly, you look at a guy like Joe Kravinoff, who's been through this program. He can relate to these players. He's going to actually start recruiting Minnesota on a more full-time basis. Got his feet wet at South Dakota State. I think that he'll be able to sell this program really well. He's got some great connections in the state of Minnesota. Davison mentioned that, too, when he committed, that Davison and Kravinoff play at the same AAU program, the Howard Poley, which is a really top-notch program in the Midwest, and, you know, that's a good pipeline for Kravinoff. And I really like what Lamont Paris has done since he got here. You know, he was the point man for Nigel Hayes, and he's done a really a solid job recruiting the state of Ohio and then going more to the East Coast, get a guy like Charlie Thomas, like I just mentioned. You know, with Bo's staff, Bo wasn't always the hired gun, I should say. He wasn't always the guy that was going in the gym and finding all these people and doing all the legwork. He was more the closer, but he wasn't like a Trevor Hoffman or Mariano Rivera type closer. I mean, he would get the job done once in a while with some of these big time kids, but Wisconsin's best bread and butter over that time period was those three-star kids from out of state and really develop them into something special and then try to hit big with the in-state kids. I think now what you see with Guard, with Krabanoff, with Moore, and with Paris is a staff that is going to go aggressively after these kids, these four-star and five-star kids, and expect to land them because of the vision that this staff has, because it's a young staff that can relate better and continue to elevate this level of recruiting that Wisconsin's been able to put forth. So, you know, I get where people have been upset in years past with Bo and maybe the perception that he can't close the deal on big kids because, you know, it's true. I mean, you saw guys, a variety of guys from the Midwest that were highly ranked that Wisconsin offered who didn't come to Wisconsin for various reasons. But with this staff, I think that you're going to see them be from – Greg Guard all the way down, a staff that's really going to sink their teeth in and going to be able to find some of these kids and close the deal with some of these kids to keep elevating their program to an even higher level than we've seen before. And I think that's what we've seen with this class with 3-4-star kids. They're going to come in further ahead of the curve in theory than maybe some of those 3-star developmental guys, and they'll be able to contribute quicker than the normal freshman, sophomore, and they will be able to be a contributor longer than some of those players.
Even without sort of a, well, I don't know if this is a recruiting class coming in at all, even without very much hype behind who's coming in, Badgers are going to have a very good team next year, obviously, because of all the talent that they bring back. Big piece of that, you mentioned Nigel Hayes. He tested the waters in the NBA draft, decided to return for his senior season. I have to admit, and I said this on the podcast, I was a little nervous, and I know that those guys are going to want to wait till the last possible second to get as much info as they can. I just started to get a feeling that Nigel Hayes might actually pursue the NBA route and decide to forego his last year. Did that catch you off guard at all that he either waited as long as he did or I mean, I guess what were you thinking was going to be the outcome of that? And how is this team different with or without Nigel Hayes?
Well, it depends what Nigel Hayes shows up. Is it going to be the Nigel Hayes we saw in January, February, and early March, or the Nigel Hayes we saw in late March? Certainly, if you get the first Nigel Hayes, this team is going to be very good next year. They're not going to be as good as they were 2 years ago when they were preseason, you know, preseason top five. This will certainly be a good team, but you have to wonder where Nigel Hayes is going to take his game now that he went through this NBA draft process, which was certainly allowed to him. I mean, they changed the rules to benefit the student athletes, and Nigel Hayes took full advantage of that. Got invited to the combine, didn't play very well, but I think he got a lot of those individual workouts, you know, going to, you know, I can't remember, like 6, 7, 8 NBA teams on his own dime to really soak up the knowledge, find out where he can improve, and find out what in his game is going in the right direction. And he can bring that back to Wisconsin to try to beef up his draft stock to the point where you can see him realistically getting drafted in the two rounds, maybe even the first round. Now, I wasn't surprised that he took that long. I kind of thought that there might be a small percentage of him that just said, you know, enough with this college thing. I'm going to go make some money now. But I think he got enough, I don't want to say negative feedback, but I think he got enough constructive criticism of his game of where another year would really benefit him in the long run in terms of being able to be an impact player at the NBA, being able to make a better salary right out of the gates. Because you look at the numbers, if you don't get drafted and you go overseas, the road back to the NBA is, it's few and far between. So him coming back another year, he'll be able to get his degree, which is big for his mom. That's one thing he's always said, that he really wanted to get his degree to appease his mom, to, you know, just kind of appease himself, that, you know, he has something to fall back on. He'll be able to do that now, I believe, by the end of first semester. So he'll be able to focus a large part of the year on basketball and getting his game better. And you have to wonder how good this team actually will be because Nigel Hayes in the mix. You know, you add all the returning pieces to this team, Bronson Koenig, Zach Showalter, Ethan Happ, where will his game go after a year? Vito Brown, where will his game go now that he finally got considerable minutes? How will Brevin Pritzel fit in? How will Andy Van Fleet fit in? Where will Jordan Hill see his game? Will there be enough minutes for all the true freshmen that played last year? Will a guy like Charlie Thomas end up redshirting this upcoming year? Or a guy like Alex Ilkanen? Because of the depth Wisconsin has now at forward. There's a lot of pieces back, without question. You only lose Jordan Smith as a contributor off last year's team, which says quite a bit about the amount of minutes and steals and assists and rebounds and blocks and so on and so forth that are coming back. But there's still going to be a process of trying to get all these pieces to fit into play and for this team to kind of live up to the expectations that are going to be placed on them.
Yeah, and I remember talking with Nigel Hayes at the NBA Combine in Chicago about him coming back and just how, you know, the team is obviously supposed to be very good, but he was quick to bring up Denzel Valentine and Michigan State, that you look how good they were. Well, first of all, they had to figure it out, but then you look how good they were during the regular season and then one and done in the tournament. So as good as Wisconsin is, they still need to actually play the games. But it'll be interesting with how good the basketball team should be and a certainly interesting year for the football team ahead. I think we will cut you loose with the one caveat of you do need to answer the question, just how good is Iowa going to be next year? I mean, let's be honest here.
Well, I think they'll be good as long as they don't play in a Big Ten championship game or they play in a Rose Bowl because, frankly, it's just not
okay
good for them in that situation.
Wait,
but I believe their Heartland Trophy case is full, which is a good thing. It's a good thing for all those people of the corn.
The weird thing about last year is that literally going undefeated means that literally every trophy case is full, which actually is the exact opposite from 2014 when their trophy case was empty. They looked like Minnesota for a while. Every traveling trophy was gone, and then they won all of them back a year ago. And I do need to correct you before you finish that terrible joke. Big Ten championship game, they were 43 seconds away from winning. They were 1 inch away from winning. Just a great play by Michigan State. Otherwise, your joke remains, and I get it, and very funny.
Too bad that the games aren't 59 minutes long, JP.
Oh, I've said that so many times. Well, thank you for this 59 minutes of your time. We just had so much fun talking Badgers, but we appreciate it. I'm sure I'll be seeing you if not at Big Ten Media Days, then Badgers Media Day, and then before we know it, it's going to be Badgers LSU up at Lambeau.
Gentlemen, call any time. I'll send you the bill.
All right, thanks, Ben. Well, there you go. That is the expert Benjamin Worgel. That was fun stuff. I'm officially excited for football now. I think after seeing the All-Star game, after talking about that, Big Ten Media Days are next week. Oh my God, Packers training camp starts Tuesday. Starts a week from today.
Ridiculous.
That's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy. So, in addition to the WIFCA All-Star game, what else is on Sports Weekly this week on Time Warner Cable Sports Channel?
We didn't even talk about baseball sectionals last night.
Right.
I was at you were at a semifinal, right?
I was at a couple pretty intense games actually. The one I saw was Pewaukee beat Waukesha North 1-0, but Greendale Muskego played an 11-10 game. Menominee Falls won on a walk off over Grafton and then wound up beating kind of the presumptive favorite West Bend West in a pretty lopsided final. So Menominee Falls gets to defend their championship. Oak Creek is going back to state. They wound up beating Muskego in the final. And Marquette, who snuck one out against Pius in the semifinal, had to score twice in the seventh to win, end up hammering Pewaukee 10-0 to advance to state as well.
Yeah, so I saw that Oak Creek Muskego game, which was, it was 10-0 at one point, but it was too early to be run ruled, so we went all seven innings. But they beat Muskego, making it basically a Greater Metro Conference tournament with Marquette, Menominee Falls, and Oak Creek all in the same conference, all making the finals. So I have some highlights and reaction from that Oak Creek Muskego game. As we talked about with Brad Davison, the Badgers commit, was at a AAU tournament in Mequon last weekend. I believe, did they win? Yeah, I think they got to the final. I don't know if they won. But anyway, I interviewed Brad Davison to talk about his commitment to the Badgers, so I got that story on there. The Brewers Hall of Fame exhibit, or the Baseball Hall of Fame exhibit, is at Miller Park. Really, really cool. I am not a huge baseball fan. I know you are.
For shame.
Well, the point was, I'm not a huge baseball fan, but that was really cool because they basically brought Cooperstown to Milwaukee. So I highly recommend that. I have some sights and sounds from that exhibit. And then probably my coup de grace of the week, got a little insider access with LaVal Jordan, the head coach of the Milwaukee Panthers men's basketball team, for a little mic'd up day in the life type stuff. So cool. I'm not going to lie, it's a pretty good episode tonight.
Excellent. Well, we'll have to circle back to the state baseball tournament next week. And you mentioned the GMC. They're always up there. I mean, Oak Creek has multiple state titles. Franklin has multiple state titles. Brookfield Central has one in the not too distant past. Of course, Menominee Falls won last year. The GMC is all over the state tournament. And certainly that's more and more the case now that they're the predominant, the largest, basically it's just Milwaukee teams with one sectional exception in the summer baseball circuit. So it's a lot of great teams in that conference. And like you said, a little bit of a greater Metro Conference showdown. Oak Creek did defeat Marquette in the GMC championship game held at Capco Park not that long ago. Those two teams are going to reacquaint in the state semifinal. That will be Friday morning early, I think, 9 o'clock to combat
the heat.
Oh yeah,
it's at 9 o'clock, which then threw a wrench in the broadcast schedule of Time Warner Cable Sports Channel, who is airing both semifinals live and the finals at 6 o'clock live on Friday. So
that's a rare get. That's going to be pretty good.
Well, we're kind of the best.
You are sort of the best. Yes, I will.
Thank you.
I will throw that out there. JP, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for joining me on the Initial Reaction podcast this week.
My pleasure, JR. Anytime that works for me.
Yes, that is so the truth. All right, sir, take care. We'll talk to you again soon.
Bye, friends.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.